Three shots, four par, I just do two. One putt, par four, birdie, woohoo. New driver, info, replace, M2. Par five, fairway, what you fin do? Think I'll try to get on into. Start right, good line, good view. Andrew, shoot him again.
That guy might be the best leaf right now, man.
No, he is the best leaf. And the problem being, dude, this is it. I mean, Dubas had to go all in because I think we got to deal Matthews this summer because, like, you know, all these guys' contracts are going to come up and we can't spend 14 mil on Matthews and keep Nylander for like 10 or whatever he's going to want. Like,
They should have got rid of two of the main four, like Marner, Matthews, Nylander, Tavares. They should have got rid of two of them, brought in a stud goalie and two like third, fourth line guys. They would have won the cup already.
I always said to the boys, you look at when the Penguins went on their run. I mean, you had Malkin, Crosby, Letang, and then you just had a bunch of guys who were gutty, like good
who
could
just get
liners.
It done. Like even a guy like Getzel, like guy could score and shit, but like he would go into the corners and battle. He would hit guys. Like that's what you need.
Absolutely.
Like, I love the Nola Chari pickup, even though he's not going to be like there on the like points on the score sheet. He's so effective. Like good PK guy, good role guy. Like those are the guys the Leafs need. They have none of them.
None of them. Absolutely. Like we need like a big guy I loved for a long time was Uncle Leo. Man, if I could have six Uncle Leos, man, playing on
right?
our bottom six, unbelievable.
Well, I know it's contract shit, but I was pissed I got rid of Foligno. I thought Foligno was picture perfect for the Leafs, like a third, fourth line guy who could play with the puck. He could score, but like he knew he was a third line guy at the end of his career, and he was just mucking it up all the time. Like, he was perfect.
It's just that Tavares, man. You know what? When they signed Tavares, I knew once they missed on the Stamkos, they were going to make a statement, and we should never have signed him. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you don't need another guy up the middle. You need guys that are going to, you know, split up that $11 million and get a bunch of guys that are good for $3.5 million.
Yeah. I'm gonna disagree with you a little bit there because Tavares is more than a player to me. He's
the guy, eh?
He wins D-zone draws. He's so valuable. He's so experienced.
I'm not saying he's not a stud, man. He is a stud, absolutely. But man, that's a big contract.
Yeah, it's huge. But I just think I think out of the top four in the Leafs, he's the most valuable, in my opinion. Like all around.
But he still hasn't won, though. That's the thing, right?
No, he hasn't. But he's a leader. He's been through everything. He's I don't know.
Man, I saw this crazy.
I just see the game differently.
I saw this. Well, you're flexing that you're a better hockey player than us.
I mean, you can lace them up. Let's go.
I'll put the pads back on. I got like the only ones I got left are from when I was like 6 years old in the garage. I go to my knee. They were like the old brown pads and stuff like that. But yeah, you'd probably go 10 for 10, 11 for 10. I might even bounce them back in on myself. Who knows? Falling back over. fuck. I don't know, man. Like the Tavares, I saw this crazy Connor Bedard stat. So right now, before he was 18, he's got, say, 65 goals or something like that before he turned 18 in junior, in a season or like a single season, whatever it is. Tavares is the one who leads that with 72 goals.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
When he's 15. Actually 15. Just hit 70, though, for the third time ever in CHL.
No, sorry. He was 16. He's 16, I think it is. And Tavares was 15 when he had 72.
Yeah, because he had exceptional. Yeah. He played Nashville, but I grew up watching him.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's got hands like crazy. I mean,
he can't skate.
He's got the high IQ. That's what I was going to say. I was going to go down the line, all the way down the line, too. He just, man, he's got cement in his fucking boots, man. Like crazy. Man.
But it's like, they had, like, San Jose had 12-5 because he's what, 11? 11 even, right? I think it is, like, right across the board.
11 even.
Yeah. And, like, San Jose had, like, a public 12-5 for him. Like, there was bigger offers and people were going to pay it. So they had, like,
no, I don't.
When he's willing to come anything. To, you knew it was going to happen. Like, man, we were all so
wanted to come home too.
Craig, you weren't happy on that. You weren't happy on that Canada Day.
Man,
that was Canada Day. Wasn't it Canada Day?
When they signed Tavares, man, there's anticipation of kind of like, okay, let's see what happens. But I said that summer, I said, do not sign Tavares. Yeah. Do not sign him. And then, you know what? I mean, I'm not kidding. Because who knows what would have happened, right, if you don't sign him?
Yeah.
But, I mean, another thing, they just never – when you signed him, you almost said, we're not going to address the fact that Morgan Riley is not a number one defenseman. And yeah, we're just going to, like, we're going to roll with our top six here and keep picking these guys up. Like, I mean, our defense core is
awful,
not playoff material. It's not going to get you past this first or second round.
And they get rid of our number one prospect stud in Sandin, in my opinion. Like,
he was good.
You want to hear my hot take? You want to hear my hot take on Matthews for next year, real quick, and we'll get into it. Bedard, first overall to Arizona. Matthews goes home to play with Bedard.
Man, I said that. I said that. Like, you think he walks? Thing to my buddy yesterday. I said, you get into the draft, and once you know who's going first, and hopefully it's Arizona, you flip Matthews for like a first and like a third or something.
You
and
take Bedard. You take Lawson Crouse, who's a stud role guy.
Yeah.
And then you take us. I wish Chikrin was still there because I'd take Chikrin, but.
I got to make a note. I got to go back and pick him up. I had to drop him on Sunday night. But, you know, boys, I started Markstrom last night. It's been a tough year for me.
Well, how about the Leafs?
Oh, you started Markstrom. I was at that game.
You were at that game. I saw you, and I meant to message you about it, man. I was like, oh, my God, I started Markstrom.
That's another thing. How about the Leafs? Two backup goalies playing out of their friggin' mind right now.
Who, Waller and fucking...
No, Samsonov and Murray. Two NHL backup goalies, in my opinion.
Oh, man, Murray's got two cups. Like,
Samsonov, Samsonov got off the... Samsonov was on the coke with Kuznetsov in Washington. I think he's a starter in the league. He was just...
the wrong people. They're definitely proving me wrong right now, but at the start of this year, I would have called them both backups.
Yeah, but...
Well, thank God they got rid of Campbell. Oh, my God.
Murray's like a... He's got two cups, right? Like, I don't know if he's
cups, he just went.
I know, but what I'm going to say is I don't know that he's necessarily even a backup anymore. Like,
He was a project.
No,
man.
Jordan Wall's been playing. He's a stud. He's a good.
That's what I mean. Is like,
you know, Chatham, baby. He played in Chatham. Yeah.
Jordan, but did he?
Oh yeah, buddy.
And then Murray played in Sioux, didn't he?
Murray played in the studio.
Yeah.
Lisa, before they got rid of like Sandin and they had
Bryce,
Max.
How do you not? Like, you played on all these teams, man. How do you not get there? How do you not
politics,
call
politics, man? Politics and injury.
Politics, man. Holy shit.
Next, we're going to see the old roommate, Boris Tkachuk, in the Toronto Maple Leafs jersey.
I wouldn't doubt it, man. Yeah. I don't know. I still got it. I could play, but whatever.
Are we keeping this in?
Sure.
Okay. We can load it up to multiple networks now. We can do a NHL or hockey pod and hockey pod and golf. We'll
just start segmenting it. We'll do our hockey chat and then our golf chat and our random chat.
All right, absolutely.
No, it's good.
8 minutes in here, boys. This is Craig, episode number 125. usually we get so we did this last week. Usually we get a pronunciation early, but we're late into this one. So Craig, can you introduce yourself?
That's
way better.
Because that's a good way of doing it. That's smart, actually, because usually people just butcher it in the first place. So it's Craig Steferak. So the E is silent. I've heard everything.
I was not even close on that one.
Steferik. I got Stefniak one time. Lee Stempniak. Yeah, I got that one time. I was like, what is that? Where was I? I was in Germany and got that one off the first tee and I had to like back off. I was laughing.
You can't see it. I can put it in the marker. Steferak.
Steferak. That's it. Exactly.
Damn. I was not even. Bryce, what were you going to go with?
I didn't even know his last name, so I didn't have a guess, honestly.
Well, we got it now. We got it now. Steferak.
I was just going to play it safe with the old Craig.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it, man.
Oh, it's backwards. It's like an ambulance. I don't know. Okay, so Craig Steferak, Canadian pro. Well, you're well traveled. I'm sure we'll get into the travel a little bit because we miss it. I haven't traveled enough recently. Bryce, you were just down in Florida though for a little bit, right?
No, I'm going in May.
Oh, are you? Okay. So where about you at now, Craig? If you can give us like an introduction, we've just been talking hockey for a while here, so a couple of good Canadian boys,
absolutely.
Give us an idea who you are, kind of maybe how we got hooked up, what's going on in the world of Craig Steferak right now.
So I've been bouncing all over the place. I mean, obviously the last couple of years have been weird with COVID and everything, but You know, I came back to, I went to Europe, came back, played in Canada for a bit, went back to Europe, and then I was doing my off season in Ottawa there. And I'm lucky enough, I've got family out Simi Valley, California. So this is where I spend usually just over a month every year. Coming down here, I've been able to meet some pretty cool contacts down here. I mean, the LA area is just kind of, you're meeting people left, right, and center. So I've been able to head out to Sherwood Country Club a bunch of times, Riviera with Eric Dickerson. So I didn't even know. Actually, that's a funny story. So last year I met Eric Dickerson, who's like, for anybody that doesn't know who he is, he's a Hall of Fame running back in the NFL. He's just the coolest guy in the world, played for the Rams. And I got paired up with him at Wood Ranch, didn't know who he was or anything, and just went out and shot 64 with him. And he was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, you want to go out to Riviera like next week? I yeah, absolutely. So yeah, struck that up. So that was pretty cool. But right now, yeah, I'm actually currently I'm in Simi Valley right now, just getting ready for the season, and then I'm heading over to Europe and getting that going. So playing a tour called the Clutch Pro Tour over there, playing some Challenge Tour stuff, hopefully some DP World Tour stuff, and then honestly, I'm one of those guys, any tournament, any event start, if it's the Asian Tour or whatever, you know, I'll throw me on a flight, I'll get there, man. Opportunity.
Now, Eric Dickerson, what's his game like?
Dude, he's a super athlete. I mean, like, he's got great hands. He's like 61 or 62 now.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's 30 years old.
That's
like
awesome.
he's crazy, man. Like, I mean, we were actually, I was over there the other night or the other day, and he was in the bar, and somebody's I'm sitting beside this couple, whatever, and he gets up and leaves, and his wife right away, like, oh man, the things I do. And I'm like, oh, well, that's true. Your husband's right there. So he's, even his her husband is like, yeah.
It's that
Eric Dickerson.
Man, it's that, like, I'm looking at photos of him right now, and he's just like, I don't know. He's just got that, like, old school retro vibe. Like, he's got a big chain on in one of these. Like, it just, yeah. I don't know, man. Like, that looks like it would just be a fun round. Like, you guys share any stories? Obviously, probably not for.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he told, like, you know, talk about the Rams and stuff, you know, stuff in the locker room and all that stuff there. And some of the guys he played with. I mean, he played with so many guys. And, like, being in the Hall of Fame, I mean, his life now is, it's just as cool as like when he played, you know what I mean? Like, between all the pro-ams and stuff he gets to play with. I think he was at a pro-am there. He was in I think he was at the BMW pro-am last year for the FedEx Cup playoffs and played with Spieth or something. So he's telling me about that.
That's cool.
You know, so it's just the hits kind of keep rolling for that guy. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So the Clutch Tour, that's a new one for us. So when I was going through kind of checking out a few things, that one's over in, is that one in Sweden?
No, so that's in England. So what happened actually was, so this is brand new. What happened was there was three main development tours over there.
Yeah.
The Alps Tour, the Euro Pro Tour, and the Pro Golf Tour, which is the one based out of Germany. Oh, there's the Nordic League. That's the Sweden one.
Okay.
And what happened was the Clutch Tour came around and kind of disrupted a lot of things over there. They were playing a lot of good courses. They were giving out Challenge Tour starts to people right off the bat. Like, you play well, say you get into a Clutch tournament and you play well, you come in, like, you know, you win or you come top two or whatever. Those Challenge Tour promoters are in contact with you right away. And you're actually getting Challenge Tour starts like the next week or like the week after, which it's like current season stuff, which was like really cool. Cause all of a sudden you get hot, you're playing well. It's not like, oh, I'm hot, I get to wait until next year to get promoted. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get promoted right away. What happened was the Euro Pro Tour, which was like the big top five get to the Challenge Tour. It completely folded because the Clutch Tour just ended up buying out the Euro Pro Tour because they just stole all their thunder. All the players came to the Clutch Tour, and you know that's the main one now in the United Kingdom and Ireland.
What's the difference over there, Craig? Like, do you notice any difference in how like pro golf is played over there versus North America?
Like style wise?
Yeah, just anything. Like, is it a different vibe? Is it like, obviously it sounds like some of the qualifications are a little bit different, like to, cause like you said, you gotta, like, it's almost an immediate like increase in status, or, you know, you can pick that up early. Is that on like regular tours? Are you playing more often? Is it easier to, like, you know, are you getting through more Monday qualifiers? Are you noticing anything different than you would in North America? Like, why you choose to go over to Europe, I guess?
It's just a lot of two irons.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, well, I'll cover style of game first. Like, yeah, like number one, I mean, you're constantly adapting, whether it's like you're playing in England or you go over to Europe. You know, you got Europe and the UK is the windiest place I've ever been in my life. Like, we played a lot of golf in Texas and stuff, like going down to Missouri to school, but it's like every day, like you're getting constant 2+ winds all the time. And like, you know, it's piss and rain all the time over there. That's not a like little stereotype of the UK. It's just always raining. So you've got to kind of just be ready for anything. So you kind of have to throw out that, like, I feel like in Canada and the United States, you kind of have like a score in mind when you go out to play most tournaments, because relative to there, like the weather is going to be pretty consistent. We're over there, like you could have one day that's completely sunny and the next day you know, it's 10 degrees and you're bundled up and it's like blowing sideways, you know? Mm-hmm. So the style of game, you got to keep the ball down. The grass is a bit different. So you're kind of adapting to different things all the time and different climates when you're traveling around all over there. And then when it comes to the qualifications, you're just kind of, I feel like there's just more opportunity over there, like, because you can be in direct contact with like the tournament directors. If you start playing well, they always keep spots open for different events. So, I mean, there's a guy I know that was playing on the Clutch Tour last year. He was playing really well. He sent off an email to the tournament director of the Joburg Open. He got in, went down to South Africa, and he won. You know, and now he's a full DP World Tour member. He got into the, because he won that, he got into the Dubai Desert Classic, and he was in the final group with Rory McIlroy on Sunday. That's so it's wild, just like you went man. From, you go from playing like the Clutch Tour, and then 6 months later, you know, you're a DP World Tour winner and playing with Rory McIlroy in the final group in a Rolex event. So
that's crazy.
It's kind of like the jump is quicker, where I feel like over here, yes, sure, there is the Monday Q route, which, I mean, you go out, try and shoot 63. You're, you know, constantly traveling around to these kind of like their muni courses for the most part that I've seen. You're not playing kind of top quality. We're over there. Even the mini tour stuff is played on like top quality courses. Like, we're playing some super good golf. I couldn't believe it when I first got over there. I was like, these are, you know, crazy golf courses, you know, for mini tour stuff. And then a big change as well is because of that kind of instant kind of qualification and like promotion, you're not, oh, I get hot, say in Canada on PGA Tour Canada, or I get hot on Korn Ferry Tour. You don't all of a sudden, if you win a Korn Ferry Tour event or you win a PGA Tour Canada event, especially, you don't get any Korn Ferry Tour starts out of that. Like, you have to, it's top five order of merit or, you know, bust. Mm-hmm. So over there, it kind of gives you that, it gives the hot hand more of a chance to move up and get promoted.
I mean, which is cool to think about, because I mean, when you're hot, especially in the game of golf. And it really just, I mean, credit to the tour that does that too, because I mean, you're gonna have competition that's way higher, because when guys are hot, they're hot, and everyone's hot if they're getting into that tournament, and then obviously the core group in that tournament. But I think that's cool, because you can have your weeks and you can have your off weeks, and when you have your weeks, I mean, you have your weeks, you're on, and you can go right up and maybe get another start somewhere else. So
well, I'm thinking about it here, like a couple weeks ago, it was the Honda Classic or a few weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. Eric Cole and Ryan Gerard, I was just grabbing the stats. I think they were both Monday qualifiers. And I know Ryan Gerard was, and he was a, I think he might have been a PGA Tour Canada guy. Made 440 something K in that event. I think Eric Cole was a Monday qualifier as well. And that was like such a massive deal. You don't hear about that much over here in like North America, right? Like you get into a Monday Q and then, you know, a couple of guys might make the cut or whatever it is, but like, it seems like there's more separation. Whereas, you know, you're talking about the guy winning the Joburg, which is, I can't remember who it is, but I actually followed the Joburg this year for some reason. Cause we were doing a Bryce and I had a little bet thing going, with a company, and I missed out on the, I can't remember the event that was at the exact same time, but I missed out on it because it started, it was in Australia, it started a little bit early. And so I did the Joburg Open, and it was actually like a pretty decent event. Like it was, like there were some players in that. So yeah, it's kind of cool. Like you're saying, Bryce, if you, if everybody's hot at the same time, like golf is very much like, like if you're talking about that guy and he's
streaky.
Sometimes. Well, it's streaky, right? So if you're playing, like you're playing a mini tour and you're playing well and you know, you qualify for an event and then you find yourself Sunday playing with Rory McIlroy, right? Like that's, yeah.
Well, that's, well, pretty even cool. Prime example, like last week I was talking to Vim and he texted me and he was like, dude, I wish the Monday Q for the Rocky Mortgage was right now. Cause like, I'm the best I could be right now. Like my game's so good. He's like, I played a match with a full-time Corn Ferry guy and I beat him like 4-3. Like I crushed him. And I was like, but like if he was out there on that tour, he'd have that chance to jump up right now. But I mean, obviously being here, it's a little tougher. Right. So
Craig, do you think that's going to be more common in golf? Like, do you think that North America might adapt some strategies like that? Like there might,
I think that's a great way to look at it. Personally. Yeah.
I hope so. I've always kind of thought that would be, you know, the best way, like, cause you know, the PGA Tour always, well, I'll get into them, but like, you know, they talk about product now because since this live thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're going to talk product and you want the best players in the world, like there was a couple of years ago, there was a guy, I can't even remember his name. He won 3 or 4 times on PGA Tour Canada, American guy, like absolutely tore it up. And I'm thinking, and then he got to Korn Ferry and I'm not even sure if he has Korn Ferry Tour status, anymore. But you're telling me that guy who went and rattled off 3 or 4 wins in like a 2-month span on the McKenzie Tour wasn't good enough to play like in multiple PGA Tour events like that year. Right. Like he was probably one of the hottest players on planet Earth. And, yeah, you know, he wasn't getting even into Korn Ferry Tour events based on, you know, he was going and shooting, you know, 18, 20, 22 under par every week at, you know, yeah, maybe they're a little bit easier golf courses, but you still got to hit the shots. And, you know, to win at that level, I mean, he was like the first guy to make like over 150 grand or something on the PGA Tour Canada. I can't remember his name.
I feel like I can remember it too. Like I know we had Callum Davison on it like a while back. That's been a little while now. I don't know if you know Callum, but you're a lefty. He's cross-handed, which is wild. And he was, so we had him on just after he won PGA Tour Player of the Year, PGA Tour Canada Player of the Year. And I think he had 2 wins, Bryce, or did he have 3?
I think he had 2 when we had him on.
And then he had a runner-up and like a couple like high-end finishes. And like, that was the thing. He's just saying like, it's not like that guarantees you any status anywhere necessarily, right? Yeah. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's got to be, and at the time, like if you're, it's kind of like, you know, we're talking hockey earlier, like, you know, Bryce and Chad's kind of going through it too. Like Bryce's younger brother, like,
I was just going to bring this up.
My thoughts is like, okay, so, you know, you're in the East Coast Hockey League. You're the best player on your team. You go to like the American Hockey League. You're not getting like the opportunity that you might, but like, you're not the worst player on that bench. Like same thing in the American Hockey League. You're the best player on that bench. You're going to the, you know, you're going to the NHL, you're not getting the opportunities, but you're not the worst player in the on that NHL team, right?
But that's also just to add on to that. Sorry, Mac, to add on to that too. Like, I mean, if you're playing out of your mind in the AHL, I mean, you're getting called up and you're going to go play in the NHL if you're playing that well, right? Like, I mean, why every other sport does it, basketball, hockey, like they all do it.
Yeah, baseball.
Why can't golf, why can't golf implement that? And like, if you're on a tour below, but you're playing out of your mind, why don't they let you jump up for a week or 2 weeks and see how you do? And I mean, if you belong there, you belong there. But kind of the way it is now is like, even if you do belong there, you don't get that chance until a year, half a year down the line, kind of thing, you know? So.
Well, like, you wonder how many guys are kind of like lost in the weeds.
Yeah, for sure.
That went and had like these hot streaks. And honestly, like, you know, and I don't even think this is taking it too far, is that they have these hot streaks for like, you know, 2 years, where we know that look at Koepka, where people go, man, he had a really good like 2-3 year stretch. And I go, man, it wasn't a 2 or 3 year stretch. It was a 5 year stretch. He was over on the challenge tour and won 3 or 4 times over there and wasn't getting any recognition from like the American golf stuff or the PGA tour. He qualified for the US Open. And I think he came in the top 10 that's how he was getting into the majors. And this is a challenge tour guy who's like the hottest guy on the planet. Like, you know, if you're hot, you know, to have that opportunity kind of given to you, I think that's how you get the best product on the, like on the field or on the golf course. Put the hottest players in the world out there. I don't want to see some guy who, yeah, he secured status, you know, 2-3 years ago, and he's going out and, you know, he's out there just trying to make the cut. Yeah.
He's essentially just limping in for the next few years.
Yeah, exactly. You might like spike a win, and then I think you get 24 months or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think
depending on the win. Yeah.
Well, also too, when you get called up, if you did get like guys in hockey, like you get called up like that, your confidence is sky high too, which just adds to your game, right? Like you're standing over the ball, you're confident, like you know you're gonna hit a good shot. I mean, that's a huge part of the golf game, right? Like a huge part of the mental game. So
there's just not that many like Sahith Theegala's, right? Like that kind of grabbed that opportunity and now he's like, you know, top 25 in the world or whatever, right? Like there's so many guys who, you know, he was kind of running over like the Corn Ferry Tour and kept it going, right? And he like came in, we saw him at the waste management and stuff like that. And it doesn't happen for everybody like that. But
quick break to introduce today's episode sponsor, Wakewater. Wakewater.ca is a Canadian company produced in London, Ontario, based in Toronto, Ontario. I've been drinking Wakewater for a few months now. To me, it tastes just like any other sparkling water, bubbly, Perrier, Pellegrino, with just a little bit more flavor, in my opinion. Zero sugar, zero sweeteners, and zero calories. Each can of Wakewater contains 85 milligrams of caffeine from green tea, which is about the same as a small cup of coffee. Contains L-theanine, so you don't get that crash. You can pop a can as you're heading out for the back nine to stay hydrated. Head over to wakewater.ca using the promo code ONTHESCREWS10. You'll get 10% off your order. Wakewater.ca, promo code ONTHESCREWS10, 10% off your order. Stay hydrated out there. Enjoy the back nine.
Well, I think too, they're going to have to do something like that too, just because with Liv, you know, all of these guys that are on the PGA Tour U rankings that are in the top 10, like if Liv goes, so people that are being real naive about this going like, oh, well, you know, like guys, like, why would you go over there? I'm like, if you're a top 10 PGA Tour U guy and you get like Corn Ferry Tour status or whatever it is, I'm taking the 5 million guaranteed money that's offered to me right out of university. Like that's, I'm set. Like I'm now essentially, I have $1 million to, you know, pursue my golf career, and I have $4 million to put in the bank, and I'm retired at 21 years old.
Well, my thing too about Liv is everyone's argument is, oh, why would you want to give up? Like, to growing up as a kid, you always want to win the Masters. You always want to play on the PGA Tour. Like, it's prestigious. It's this and that, which I agree with. What happens when all these kids who haven't been born yet come through and they're like, oh, PGA Tour, Liv, they're both there.
Yeah.
They're offering me X amount of money. They're offering me not even close to that money. Why would I go there? Like, they don't have any, like, you know?
Exactly. And people like to talk about, you know, like, when Rory came out, and he's talking like the big one that they were really trying to inflate that whole, like, oh, it's blood money, it's Saudi money. Rory McIlroy's sitting up there in a Nike shirt that was made by somebody, like, you know, in a sweatshop, you know, like all this stuff. It's like the hypocrisy with the whole thing. Like you watch Premier League soccer, every team is funded by the Saudis. You know, the LPGA Tour is like funded by Armaco, which is a huge Saudi backed organization. It's just like they're only getting all mad when it's going to affect their product. And it's just it's just the hypocritical stuff. I don't like it at all when it comes to that.
Well, I think it's too, it's like kind of going back to, like, just before you take that quick break, like the idea of, like, you need the best players to be playing at all the top tournaments, right? So that's when then they're talking about, like, denying people at, like, the Masters and any of the major championships. So it's like, this is gonna eliminate golf. Like, this is just so bad for golf, right? Like, because, you know, imagine playing a Masters right now without Cam Smith. Like,
exactly.
Or DJ.
Or DJ, defending champion. You know, a guy that's literally like
2019. Like that's a recent winner, right? Like, it's and then Cam Smith's been there 3 years in a row now. He's been top five. Like, I think he went that'd be tough. Like, if they miss Patrick Reed, I'd be like, well, whatever. Like,
nobody cares, man.
But honestly,
even, like, you know, like, you know what, as much as we all hate him and, like, you know, he's not even a polarizing figure, because I haven't heard anybody defend him. Like, you know, he's just a moron. But at the same time, you know, he's that guy we all love to hate. So, like, you know,
you need those villains.
I like seeing him there. When he was the Dubai Desert Classic, how awesome was that to see Rory make that 15 footer to, you know, beat him by one? Mm-hmm. You know, that was awesome. That storyline isn't there if the villain isn't there. So every sport needs villains.
I also need Bubba there, man. I need Bubba at the Masters.
Further this thing removed from a villain, but, like, you know, they got Bryson Brooks, Patrick Reed, Ian Poulter, like Sergio. Those are probably the five biggest villains, quote unquote, on the PGA Tour, or that played in the PGA Tour. So, like, you remove that and, like, the dynamic is, like, gone. Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, you think of the Ryder Cup and stuff like that, man. Ian Poulter's never lost a match. Like, he's never lost a one-on-one match, right?
Even Joaquin, like, you can't tell me that guy wouldn't contend on the PGA Tour and top 10 in the world right now. Like, he's a stud. Like,
he's a top 10, 15 player,
I mean, even like, you know, I know he gets lost kind of in translation, but, like, Mito Pereira almost won a major last year.
Right.
And, you know, won three times the year before on the Korn Ferry Tour. Like, he was one of the hottest players in the world, and you didn't even get to see him for a full season on the PGA Tour. He got one season. He got his rookie season, and then he went and took the money. And how can you blame anybody, though? That's complete financial security for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I loved how DJ was just like, well, you know,
get it for the money, man.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm rich and I'm even more rich now. And, like, but that was, like, the honesty everybody wanted. I think that was kind of, I don't know, people wanted to villainize those characters by, you know, Bryson talking about, I don't know, actually Bryson was, like, pretty straightforward he was actually not too bad with it, but so many of the guys but so many of the guys talking about, like, oh, it's the balance of life and, like,
the team format. Yeah, exactly. The balance of life. It's like, you're playing 14 events anyway, and the top guys anyway that win, you're only playing 18 tournaments a year, and LIV is going to continue to expand. I know that, like, they're playing 14 this year. They'll play 18 next year if they're still going. They'll play 18.
One of the things I was kind of curious about is some of them are, like, I know Sergio and DJ had to drop Adidas. Like, they're doing, like, team format, like, outfits almost and stuff. Outfits or, like gear. So I don't know if that was built into their contracts up front. A lot of those, nothing really surfaced on that. If those players knew about that stuff ahead of time, like, you know, when they were signing their contracts, did they know a year from now, I'm not going to be with Adidas anymore, or I'm not going to be, like, wrapping one of these big brands, but that's part of why I'm getting a $100+ million contract or $50 million guaranteed, you know?
Well, I think what happened too is they sold. So now it came to light that they're selling them, like, each team as, like, their own franchise.
Yeah.
And they all have, like, ownership stake in the franchise, you know? So it's just all of a sudden, you know, if it did take off and it did work, you know, and we're still in the very early stages of this thing. Yeah, like, if this thing does work, these guys are going to look like geniuses, because all of a sudden you've got a, you know, even if it's a 5% stake in something that, you know, is going to be paid for by these big corporations, like you're going to be just raking in money for the next, well, till kingdom come, you know, the end of time. So, you know,
yeah, for guys like, I'm sure guys like Phil and DJ and stuff that have like big stock options essentially in these mm-hmm. brands that are now there. It's like same thing with Ronaldo when he went over, he's like playing in the Saudi league, and it's like $330 million. I don't know, it's probably 10
just
billion.
A dumb number.
Who knows, like the amount of zeros don't even matter, but that's the same thing is like the idea of like those structured deals is to get, you know, a heavy amount of ownership in that team, right? So mm-hmm. if they're branding these things, I think the idea of like team golf is kind of cool. I think people are, you know, settling in on it a little bit now, and kind of like you said, Craig, it's like there's that money is coming from everywhere. Like, you know, there's so much money being abused and used inappropriately everywhere. It's really hard to hear. Like, I just want to see the best players, man. We're just fans of the game. We want to see the best players, right? And same as like when you're playing, you want to play against the best players, right? Like it's, mm-hmm. yeah. So for us, major championships, those types of things, we want to see the best players out there. I would hate to see a Masters this year without like Cam Smith. I know obviously he'll be there, but that'd be tough. And even Neiman too is like dominant. Like those are the two, mm-hmm. like DJ's is like, those are the top three players. That's easy to say on their tour right now. And, you know, those are still probably all top 320 players in the world right now. Like,
easily
removing those guys from events is tricky. Like, that's tough, man. Like, yeah.
I mean, how about like right now, like, you know, we talk about the best players. We want the best players in the field and everything. And now I keep seeing the world golf rankings become less and less relevant when these guys keep slipping and slipping. And, you know, you got a guy right now, and you can say it's a 48-man field and all this crap, but you've got a guy in Charles Howell right now that is playing some of the best golf in the world right now. Yeah. And he's not playing in any of the majors this year. And that's I don't know, that's kind of not, I don't think that sits right with a lot of guys. John Rahm is the only guy that really came out and said, you know, it's a major championship. I want to see the best guys.
Yeah.
All the other guys, you know, making these guys out to be villains and everything. You know, it's just like, I don't know. It's crazy. I don't like when any of that stuff happens. I mean, I'm sitting here on an Apple device. That doesn't mean I support what's going on with Apple and all that. Like, you know, it's just like, I don't know. They're golfers at the end of the day, and they took the money, and that, I think they all should have just came out and said that too. I liked how DJ said it, but they all should have said that immediately. Like, look, you would have taken it, and that's it.
Yeah, like his approach was kind of like really DJ, like just very typical DJ. Where at least Bryson was like, he was just flat out, it was a business decision, and mm-hmm. and like I respected him for that, like. I don't know about the two dimples on the golf ball thing when he's putting and stuff like that. I don't know about that, but like I could align with the idea of like, it was a business decision. That's why I did it. That's, you know, it was smart. It was smart financially, but, all right. Can we take it back, Craig? We skipped over a few notes here. We've had our fantasy hockey chat. We've got into kind of like, you know, pro golf, overseas and stuff like that. Can we take it back to when you first got involved in the game? What was it that kind of got you in? What age were you? You know, has it always been golf for you? Obviously it sounds like there's some hockey in there, but multi-sport athlete, anything else that, that comes to mind as a young aspiring golfer?
Yes, my dad played, so he played junior A hockey, and was it like an Ottawa boy, and ended up actually playing, he played professional hockey over in Europe. Mm-hmm. So he played in England, and that's where, he ended up meeting my mom and everything, but he got me started in the game. Cause I mean, he was an avid golfer, you know, like that's what hockey players do in the off season, you know, that's what you're doing. So, he got me started. I was, like, I mean, there's videos of me for like, I'm 2.5 years old, like just like, you know, right when I could walk, I'm putting, hitting balls when I was 3, you know? And then that, for me, it was growing up. I played hockey in the wintertime, and I played golf in the summer. And my dad having a really good, background, in the game of golf as well, because he was always like, you know, a one or two handicap growing up. Like, he was a really solid player. He just kind of instilled a work ethic that I had even as a kid. Like, you know, I remember every summer, you know, it was 7 days a week since the age of, like, you know, they dropped me off at the golf course when I was 6 years old. And, you know, that was my kind of daycare. Like, that was it. I went on the golf course and wheeled my bag around and played and hit a bunch of shots and everything. And I was one of those kids. I was really lucky I guess it was a little bit of skill involved as well. I just won everything as a young junior. I remember just playing in all the CJGA events and like the MJT events. And I think I won like, you know, 30 times before the age of like 11 years old type of thing. Like, I just won a bunch of golf tournaments. After that, my dad kind of sat me down. I think I was 12 or 13 years old. And he's like, well, is it going to be hockey or golf? And I really excelled at golf and I really liked it. And, as much as I love hockey, I just kind of, he's 5'8". And at that point, you know, it kind of looked like I was going to go down the same road. Yeah. I ended up being 6 feet tall, but it was just like, I'll probably be safer going with golf, you know, and not getting run over at 5'8". Mm-hmm. It worked out. I mean, it was awesome. I've always been super passionate about the game. It was kind of ever since I was, you know, 3 years old, I wanted to be a professional golfer and, you know, play in the majors and do all that. And, you know, hopefully, it's a crazy game, man. Like, you know, I just turned 26 years old, and as crazy as it sounds, like, you know, I wake up every day and think I can, you know, win a major.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's there.
That's what I was going to say, is like, winning like that at a young age too would be so infectious, right? Like, that feeling of like, you know, you're playing with all your buddies, all your peers, all your friends, whatever it is, and you're just, you know, dusting them each golf tournament. You got 30 wins at the age of 11 or 12, right? Like, that, like, kind of like, you know, you're sort of bred to be a winner. Like, I know, Bryce, when you were younger, like, you're pretty good back then. Like, things were...
Buddy,
things...
My career went downhill from 5 years old.
But like, you know, that type of past, or like those winning those events and stuff like that when you were younger, it'd be hard to, it'd be hard to kind of get rid of that. Right. And as you grow older in the game and you remember that success, it's like probably what kind of fueled you to make that choice. At least, I don't know. I know, like, I just play money games now, so when I win a few bucks, it's the only reason I want to go back, right? It's the only thing I got.
Well, you also learn to, like, get used to it, kind of, in a sense. I mean, our lacrosse team, I was a big lacrosse player. It was kind of lacrosse and golf in the summer and hockey in the winter. Our lacrosse team won 7 provincial championships in a row. And I just, like, it became, like, we became accustomed to it, and it was, like, if we didn't win, like, we didn't know what to, like, it was so shocking to us that... We didn't know. So you almost like learn to win. And like, that's all you know. So once you have that, it's kind of like, that's with everything now. You just know, like, you just, if you don't win, it's kind of like, I did something wrong.
I think I was super lucky that I learned how to win like early. And then I got to an age, I was 15, 16. 16 years old, because I started getting the letters in the mail there, you know, Arizona and Texas A&M and some of these things, because I was winning a ton before the age of 15. And then I tried to make some swing changes and stuff. And from the age of like six, when I was 16 and 17, which are huge years, when you're getting, you know, those are your NLI years, like for college. And I was absolutely horrible. Like, I couldn't keep the ball on the planet. And then that's actually why I ended up going down to Drury in the end. And it ended up, I think, being one of the best things that could have happened, because I think so many guys, you know, they want to go right off the bat into like, throw me into the fire, you know, throw me into like the SEC or this and that. And I learned how to win. And then I had to kind of I fell down into this like pit of despair that I had to dig myself out of for a couple years in like the late junior golf. And then once I got to college, I got to be the number one player on my team all 4 years. When I was down in Division II program, you know, I got to win, learn how to win again, and kind of like recapture that feeling. But I feel like there's a lot of guys where like you build up and then all of a sudden you turn pro, and then that's kind of where the failure happens. I got to kind of experience that failure early. So I know like what was, I knew that like, you know, that can happen at any time. So you just better be working your ass off and, you know, keep moving in the right direction. So yeah, no, I think that was huge to be able to kind of, to be kind of like a protege of sorts when I was a kid and then just lose it for a couple of years. Like just not know, like I was shooting in like the mid 80s, like low 80s. Like I couldn't like, I remember playing in the Ontario AM and like just trying to make the cut. Like I'm like, I'd be slicing it two fairways over and just like got really good at scrambling the ball. And then once I got my game back, it was like, wow, all of those things kind of really helped.
Well, I'll tell you what, I kind of went through something similar, like with the O and stuff, playing pretty high level hockey. And I was never like a big time player, like never really was too relevant. But my 19 year old year, I decided to leave and go play junior B in Chatham. And I still to this day will tell everyone I talk to about it that it was the best decision I ever made for my career, because one, I had the most fun I ever had playing junior hockey when I went down. And two, I was probably playing the best hockey I was playing because my confidence was high, and it was just kind of made the right decision. And I mean, obviously different to you, my career didn't really go anywhere, but it's kind of nice to get that refreshing kind of, you get that spark, that confidence when you kind of step back and kind of maybe take a step down for a minute. Like playing level wise, you get that confidence up and you can, push through and you become a better golfer or a better player. Yeah, essentially.
Big time. Sometimes you just have to take a step back, because if you keep, but sometimes, and that's the thing, like as a competitive, like as competitive people, it's hard to do, because totally, all you want to do is keep pushing forward, totally, keep pushing forward. There was a big part of me that said like, no, like I'm going to sign with a Division I program. I'm going to do this, you know, I'm going to go to like, you know, University of Michigan, play in the Big Ten and do this stuff. And it's just like, I think if I did that, I think I would have got my ass kicked. Confidence would have got lower and I wouldn't have found my game again.
That's awesome too. Cause like, I mean, obviously, like I said, it's kind of a different situation, but I went through the same thing. Like it was so hard for me to walk into that GM's office and say, look, I think I'm just going to pack my bag and head home. And it was one of the hardest decisions ever made, but still to this day, I'll tell you, it was the best decision I ever made. So I know, wow, the circumstance is a little different, but I mean, kind of a similar.
Same idea. Yeah.
Same idea. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Which is cool. But I mean, clearly it worked, because look where you are now. So, I mean.
Now, Craig, before we jump over, you've got a couple pro wins I saw. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about those a little bit? One of them's on the Players Tour up here. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that was, so I went over to Europe my first year when I turned pro, and COVID happened. So yeah, that was like a shortened season. I only got a few events over there. And then that was that year where like, you know, even into the spring, Dougie Ford was closing the golf courses on us, yeah, and like whatever, and all that crap. Like, oh yeah, I know what you guys are doing in the parking lot, and that whole fiasco. You know, that was a joke. But I remember I worked. What happened was actually, so I was at my grandfather's. I lived kind of like on and off there for about 3 months. He had a fall that winter and broke his knee. So I was living over there and helping him out, and we'd set up a hitting bay, and I've got a TrackMan. So I was there every single day, and you're not just sitting in there and hanging out with your grandfather all day. What are you doing? I was hitting balls for 7-8 hours a day, yeah, every single day. And I said, I kind of had an idea that I'd been trying to work on anyway with my golf swing. And it was kind of like kind of a mix between Victor Hovland and a Colin Morikawa, just a place that I really thought I could get my golf swing in. And this COVID period gave me all of this time to be able to, like, here's the time, like, there's no excuse, like go, and you're sitting in the garage, you're not allowed outside, you know, there's like, what's the most productive thing you can do? It's like, let's rebuild this golf swing. and see what happens. And I went up to Quebec with the East Coast Pro Tour guys for like a week. They had a thing where like get out of Ontario, come up to Quebec because Quebec was still allowing golf and everything. And I got up there and met those guys and they told me about their tour and everything. And I was like, okay, I'm going to between PGA Tour Canada and East Coast Pro Tour, I'll do some of that. And it was the first event of the season, the Toronto Open. And I went out and, you know, it was awesome to like, you know, to see all of that work that I'd put in for like, you know, the last 4 months, 5 months inside, you know, hitting balls till my hands bled. And then to go out there and, you know, apart from a few putts, like ball striking wise, I kind of dismantled that Lionhead golf course, which is just super tough, and just didn't really miss a shot for a ton of the time that I played. So it was awesome to get the monkey off the back, you know, especially having not won since college. You go, can I win at the pro mm-hmm. level, whatever pro level? And the answer was yes, pretty quick. So that was awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good tour. Like I've chatted with Massimo a couple times and like we've got a couple past winners that have been on the pod too. So like I know Ty won the match play championships and stuff there. Like there's, and he had like one of the craziest matches like in the existence of match play. It was like, it was nuts. I think he was saying like he was like 12 deep or something like that. Like he was just, it was
him and Casulo.
Yeah. Yeah. Marcus Casulo. Yeah. And I remember like I messaged Mark and he was going to hop on the pod, and then we've kind of gone back and forth, and that is somebody we need to reach back out to, definitely. But I think he was like seven under, eight under. He lost like, I don't know, 4-3 or something like that to
Match play is like, crazy, yeah, man. Yeah, it's just, I won the Toronto Open, and then it was like 2 weeks later, they had that match play. And I think I won my first match like 4-2, played really well. And then the next day, I think I made like 6 birdies and 1 bogey and lost in 24 holes. And it was just like, you're just like, you're sweating it out the whole time. And then you're making like, Daniel Kim, he's bounced around forever, and he just like every time I made a birdie, he'd roll something in.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just like at some point here, come on, like, you know, somebody's gonna fold here. And I think he shoved one of about 6 inches on the 24th hole and I missed a 15-footer, and that was me. I was cooked.
I just remember Ty explaining some of that, and he was just like, it was just his day. He rolled in like a couple 40-foot eagle putts, and like, well, like Mark was making birdies and stuff. It's just like that. That's just, but you got it. Like hats off, right? Like you can't even be upset.
No, that's it. I mean, it's the only time where you're just 1v1. You're playing the other guy. Like every other time, you're playing the golf course and you're playing the field, and like, you know, just when you see a guy roll in like a couple of 40-footers, because I remember hearing about it, like you start rolling in some bombs and stuff like that, it's demoralizing, man, because you feel like you even played the hole maybe even better than the other guy, and then you, all of a sudden you're going and you're like 2 down after 3 or something. You're like, I haven't hit a bad shot yet and I don't have a chance. Like,
that's why you never bet against Kevin Kisner in the Dell match play.
How it rolls everything in.
Well, and like we said with Ian Poulter too, that's why like when they were talking the Ryder Cup and stuff, right? I was just like, man, imagine not having Ian Poulter in the Ryder Cup or something like that, or the Ryder Cup just being non-existent anymore. But
match plays a whole new bear, man.
Yeah, it's wild, man, wild. So we had the Toronto Open, and then you have another one on
So I won on the clutch tour last year, which was like, and as much as the Toronto Open, that was an awesome one to get off like the back in the pro event. The clutch tour last year, the one I won, it was awesome. I played in the final group with a couple of guys who've like had multiple DP World Tour starts. You know, the field was like filled with guys who had Challenge Tour and DP World Tour experience. And then I went out the last round, and we had a rain delay after 3 holes. I birdied the first hole and we had a rain delay, and then we went back out. And to be honest, we went back out into pretty much the same thing. Like, it's just England, like it's a links golf course. It's actually connected to St. George's, Prince's Golf Club, it's called. So they have the Monday qualifier for the Open there every year, and it's a really stout track. But I went out there and I just had one of those rounds where, I mean, I was hitting fairways, I was hitting greens, I was rolling in nice putts and everything. And I shot 6 under par, bogey free 6 under par, and ended up winning by, I won by 4. And to be in, like, I was in the second last group. And I walked up and all of a sudden, you know, they had like their media team following on 18, and I didn't know where I stood. So I finally, after I hit my tee shot down the middle on 18, I'm like, okay, I need to kind of know where I'm at. And I asked the guy, like, what do I have? Like, I know I'm leading, but like, what? And he gave me one of these, right? Just gave me the five. And I was like, let's go, man. That was a night. That was a lot better than the Toronto Open win. Cause I only had a 2-shot lead coming up 18, and that's still, you're still like, man, bogey birdie is a possibility, right? Yeah. Like, that's right there. But 5 shots, it's like, even I can't screw that one up from the middle of the fairway.
I don't know, man. Yeah. We talked about Mito Pereira a little bit earlier. So, that was just sickening to watch, man. Like, somebody, like, you're a deep golf fan. That was sickening to watch. But yeah, you hit one up the middle, and then you're feeling pretty good though. Like, you're
absolutely,
if you're plus 5, like, that's got to feel like you can just comfortably hit one somewhere in around the green, whatever you want to do, right?
And just, I think I say, so the funny part about it too, I shoved it to like 4 feet, and then I hit probably the most like conservative, pathetic little shoves 4 foot, like, I'm like, I'm not, and it was like one of those putts, a little downhill slider, like one that you have to give pace to make it, and I don't even think I got it to the hole. It's like, I just
man, remember watching Scottie Scheffler at the Masters last year? Like,
yes, like, he's exactly got the same thing,
4-stroke lead, and there. Tapping it around, and then, like, I think the first one he rolled like, oh, I don't know, 6 feet by, then missed the comebacker, and like,
exactly. And I felt that for sure. You're standing there and you know you've won the tournament, but it's just like, you can't get your hands to get that ball in the hole, man.
That's just like, it must have been such a good feeling though too, because it was your first year on that tour. Yeah. So like, kind of like you said, getting that monkey off the back, or just kind of like, I don't know, feeling like you're there, like you belong there, like, you know, you got guys who are playing DP World Tour events and stuff like that. Like, it's, that'd be such a nice feeling, man, to know that you're, so 5 strokes up, walking out. Yeah,
exactly. It's all kind of like, and it's just like, you find these like new little kind of things to punch through. And that was one of them that was massive. Like, I won, and that actually opened up the door to last year. Unfortunately, just with my travel plans and some of the stuff I ended up having 3 opportunities to play in Challenge Tour events, and I only got to play in the one because I'd signed up for other stuff with flights and everything. And it just financially for me was like, I'm committed. Like, I'm not just throw, cause it's like non-refundable stuff. Like, I'm not throwing away like a bunch of money to go and play, you know? But I got to play in my debut on the Challenge Tour. And that was another one, because all of a sudden you're taking that step up, that next step. And I went, and first round I bogey free 4 under par, next round shot 2 or 3 under par. I think I finished 30th or something at around minus 10, but to go out and I wasn't putting well for the week. But to go out there, and it's just like, I took that next step. Like, you know, you made your debut. Not only did you make the cut, I was in the top 10 for a good chunk of the tournament there for a while. So, and then I finished out on, I had a bad Saturday, but on Sunday I shot bogey free 5 under. So it's just like, you're always looking for those next kind of like, almost a little pats on the back, like, okay, I can do this. Like, and here going, it is, here's going, the proof. Yeah.
Well, and true, like, I guess too, you ever, Craig, like, I'm looking at the, I was trying to pronounce your last name there. Steferak. But we're in conversation with Craig Steferak. So you get in the group with like another player, and you kind of, like you said, you had been in the final group with a couple guys who, you know, been on the DP World Tour, play some events, Challenge Tour and stuff like that. You're obviously like getting a piece of who that guy is, and like mentally that's got to have some effect on how you play, right? And like, knowing that if you go 5 deep on a day and like you beat that guy, like, that's got to feel good, right? Like, that's, You know, it's kind of like playing a match. It's almost like playing a match, right? Like there's, do you ever have that, you know, connection like in a round of golf, or do you just kind of blinders on playing it for yourself?
No, I'm big time like that. I mean, you know, I've always been one of those guys. I'm a big time, I'm a big time show off. So I feel like, you know, one of those, a thing for me is like, you put a better player in my group and it's almost like, you know, like the headlights are on now, like, let's go. And you're trying to, you know, yeah, you're trying to play your own game and you're trying to shoot the lowest score, but you know, it's like kind of what we talked about earlier. You want the best players in the field because you want to be able to go out there and prove that, yeah, I belong here. You know, I don't get tentative when I'm playing with those guys. It's almost like I'm going to show this guy that I'm better than him, you know? So, yeah. I mean, I've always felt like even that's where I feel like my game translates as well. Like if I can get those opportunities and find a DP World Tour event or like a Asian Tour International Series or even a PGA Tour event, put me with the best possible guys. Like I'd love to go out and play with Rory. I don't think that's like when you get nervous and like it's almost like that should turn you kind of on. Like let's go, you know. Sure. I feel like when you're playing professional golf, I mean, you have to be that way. If you go into your shell, I mean, you're going to be found out pretty quick.
Yeah, this sounds like a lot like what a young Connor McDavid did to you, Bryce.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to bring this up again.
No, right? we've told this story a couple times over the past 125 episodes, but yeah, just you could tell
Bryce, if you want. I mean, for our listeners, I'm sure a lot of them have heard it, but essentially, I was a fourth line guy when I was 17, and obviously McDavid, he's my age, but he was already been in the league for 3 years because he got exceptional. So we iced the puck, and we got caught out on the icing, and obviously him, Connor Brown, also in the NHL, Dane Fox, who plays in Europe, but all, I think Dane Fox was 50-goal scorer, Connor Brown was 100-point scorer, and McDavid. So big line. They hop over. We somehow get the puck out, and it's kind of one of those iffy icing, so I'm trying to beat it. My whole line changes. I do beat the icing, but the D goes around to McDavid on the wall, and I went to go make a name for myself and crush McDavid, and I kind of lunged for the hit, missed him, turned around, and he was already at the red line on a 3-on-2. And I did the old walk of shame to the bench and changed on the back.
Yeah, done. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the Connor McDavid story.
No, didn't mean to put you out there, Bryce. Didn't mean to.
No, it's all right. I mean, I was on the ice with him. Not many people can say that. So
that's true.
I don't mind telling the story. It's kind of a fun.
Fun memory. I think that's the best thing about golf too, and where I can get away with kind of like almost saying that. It's like in golf, like you go out and. Like you get thrown in like a group with like a Rory as like a guy like me or something, you're not expected, like you're not playing against just him, you're playing against the course. But like if you can go out there and beat him, then all of a sudden you've made the name for yourself. But there's no walk of shame, like you taking a lunge and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Connor McDavid just walked that guy, you know, like he's supposed to.
Now he's doing that to pretty much
now he's doing he wants, that right? to, you know, number one D-man all over the planet.
I don't know if we've ever said it, but when Bryce played 2018 and 19 in the Goge, 37 games played, 81 goals and 72 assists for 153 points. So
that was in the GMHL. Yeah.
Was it
not okay. the Goge?
Okay, yeah sorry,
was,
no, that so, was.
I was going to play for University of Windsor, but they didn't take my high school grades for my U.S. school, so I had to do a year of, like, community college, and, I had to do that for a year. So instead of sitting on my butt, I played in that Outlaw Junior A League. So
the Outlaw, we had a bunch of guys from Caledonia that went out and played in the Outlaw.
Niagara Whalers. I think that's still the current record. Don't quote me on that, but I think it's the current points record in that league.
Still. I mean, that was still like no matter what, man, that feels good going out there and being, being the man.
I had so much fun.
3, 6, 9, 12, 15. That's almost 5 points a game, man. I'm pretty sure it was
4.3 or something, if I remember
correctly. Yeah, that one's doing pretty good. 153 and 37. That's
quick nice. Break from the pod. Mac here from Manscaped, introducing the Beard Hedger from our friends over at Manscaped.
With 20 different lengths, you can look good from the cart path to the clubhouse. Shop manscaped.com using the promo code OTSGolf for 20% off plus free shipping. Shop any and all Manscaped products at manscaped.com using the promo code OTSGolf for 20% off plus free shipping. We'll see you on the back nine.
Name. Let's go to the other one. L.E. Plourd. Sounds like he might know you. We had a quick chat. Favorite golf course to play?
L.E. Favorite golf course to play?
I think you might have taught him. It sounded like you might have been.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Danny. Favorite golf course to play? Man, I'm sure
over there you've got to play such good courses too.
There's tons of golf courses over there that are great. I mean, my favorite golf course, my favorite golf course ever is it's called Carn Golf Links. If you look that up, like, I mean, you'll see why. I mean, you're walking through like a couple hundred foot sand dunes, like every fairway is just like,
yeah,
you know.
Where's that one?
Yeah, if that one's in Ireland.
Okay.
So it's crazy, right on the ocean. I mean, it's beautiful. But then like my I guess like that's kind of like an out there one, because there's not a lot of people that like it's so hard to get there. Like I've got family over there, so like that's where you can go take a trip. But like got ones that people know. I love Torrey Pines. I mean, Torrey Pines is so fun. I mean, like knowing what happened there in 2008 and then getting to go out there and play. I mean, like it's beauty. You see some of the, you know, I've watched that like telecast over and over, and like to see some of the shots that were hit. I mean, yeah, it's a crazy place. And the fact that it's public and people can go out and play it, that's sick. Like to anybody listening, like go play Torrey Pines, man. It's a great experience.
That's so funny. You just brought up 2008. You're talking about the US Open, right? When Tiger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That literally came across my TikTok today, and it had like one of six, two of six. And I watched every single one. I had no idea that they played an 18 hole.
Yeah,
is that the Steve Williams Tiger Woods
after 18?
Yeah, that's him and Rocco Mediate played an 18 hole playoff, and then went to sudden. Like I had no clue until
Rocco
today that happened.
Rocco had a 15 footer on 18 in the playoff, like the 18th hole of the 18 hole playoff to win.
I know.
And then they interviewed him, like I can't remember if it was Fox or something. They did like a whole thing on it. And he hit it. He hit this 15 footer like 2.5-3 feet by, and like his son was like, "What do you think it's gonna do?" And he goes, "I have no idea what it's gonna do. It's gotta go. It's gotta go in." So he just whacked it at the hole, and it went in. But like, you know, a 3 footer to keep the playoff going with Tiger, I can't imagine the feelings that Rocco felt that day. Mm. I mean, it's just unbelievable to be in that arena.
Mm.
Is that the Steve Williams, like the awkward handshake?
The awkward handshake. And then he grabs the US Open trophy and does something weird. Yeah. I think that was it. Yeah.
That's the Tiger clip of him with the double fist.
Yeah. Pump. Yeah. That's
when he
sends it to a playoff.
Yeah. I got a buddy. Yeah. We were talking about Torrey Pines not long ago, and he was like, they were having a bad storm there, and he had traveled, I think it was like 6 hours to go play it. Didn't get out. And but he was saying they hooked him up in the bar or something. They gave him some lunch or something. So he just got to check out the clubhouse and stuff. He said it was still a really cool experience to be there, right? Like it was definitely worth going. But B. Kachinko, KICHINKO 11. Don't know if you know this one. It sounds like you might, but yeah. How fun was it for you to give some of your hometown guys golf lessons?
Oh, the best, man. I love those guys. Actually, Ben Kachinko, he did a whole thing there. I don't know if they're still doing it. They were they did like a YouTube channel. I don't think they're still doing it, but they did they called themselves like the Bogey Bros. So I gave like there was like three of them. I gave them all lessons there, got them in shape, got them playing, and then I think they legitimately thought we played a match, 9-hole match. These three guys scrambled me, and I think they legitimately thought they were going to win. And I think I shot 6 under and won like 4 up. It wasn't particularly close. I think Benny actually made a 30 footer on the second hole and was screaming and shouting and running all over the green. And then I made a 25 footer on top of him. So that was,
the
that
boys
was
would be fired up, eh? On the second hole, making a 30 footer against you and just
big time. And then canned one on top of him. And then that the lights were out after that.
I like how this turned into how much fun was it to like teach some of your buddies and you just smack them about it. You're just like, we played a match and I just smacked them down. That's so good, man. That's so good. We got another one here too. I cropped out the name. I'm sorry. But lowest round you've ever carded. I guess they didn't say, but professional and like if you
do
got
both.
A pro, yeah, do both.
Professionally 65. Not professionally 57.
Shut up.
57.
What?
So
par
71. Par 71. So is the golf course that I grew up at. It used to be called Sundrum. It's now called Mont Hill. Or anybody that's in the area, go play it. That's where I grew up playing. It's only 60. I get this all the time too. Like, how long? It was 6,100 yards or whatever.
It's a 57, man. It doesn't matter. That's a 57.
I went absolutely ballistic. Yeah. It was after I was working there as the pro, after college.
Yeah.
And, I just went out like a men's night there after work at like 3 o'clock and I shot 29 on the front and just went ballistic on the back. I think I started like eagle, birdie on the back nine too. And it was just like, oh, okay. One of those ones where if I didn't stuff it to 3 feet, I made a 20 footer. Like I'm never going to shoot that score again. That's the thing. Like it was just absolutely, I did not miss a shot and every putt I hit, I can't remember how many putts I had. It was something stupid too. Like every green, well, you shoot 57, every green you hit, you made it.
I mean, that's 14 out of your 18 holes.
Yeah, it was dumb. Yeah. It was absolutely
Well, I guess eagles and stuff.
But that's still, wild, that's, though. That's like,
yeah,
that's, yeah, a that's low.
What a day.
That's low.
Did you, have an ace on the card? You have a one
didn't
that
have
day?
An ace.
No?
No, didn't have an ace on the card. I had three eagles. Yeah. No, it was a lot.
Do you have any aces right now?
Aces. I've got eight aces.
Okay. All right. So we got any of those? Any of those in pro.
You
events.
Got one coming here shortly. If you haven't heard.
Yeah.
Every time an ace comes up with a goal, with a player.
Oh, there we go. They all happen. I haven't had one now for, a couple years now, actually, but I've got,
we'll be ready to celebrate. Cause we've had three guests now that within probably maybe a month and a half was probably the longest since.
Yeah. We had four actually. Let's forgot one, but do you know Kevin Gordo?
Gordo's.
Gordo, you're a lefty as well. Right. So he was on chatting with us and he made one, I think like the next day or something, like a couple days later. Yeah. And then I was talking with Lauren Zaretsky. I don't know if you know Lauren. She's at Maple Downs, I believe. She's at Texas A&M right now. She had her LPGA tour debut at the CP Women's Open. I talked to her like the morning, as she was leaving, she was like talking to me that morning and then she left. And then her first LPGA tour round, she made an ace, man. It was just like, I remember being on Sportsnet and I was like, I saw it. Cause I was refreshing her feed, like checking it out. And I was like, a one, like really? Like, and I went on, it was on SportsCenter and stuff like that. It was amazing. Cause we had talked about it too. Yeah.
And then Bim Jarred one too, after he was on.
Yeah. Yeah,
boys. Well, absolutely. I get one here soon. Okay, you got a case of Moosehead coming both your ways, man.
Perfect. Man, that's awesome. But thanks to you, obviously know who they are. Thanks for the submissions. There are a couple more, but we're running pretty long here though. But this was great, Craig. Really appreciate this one, man. This was a fun episode. A lot of really good details and a lot of I don't know, man. Just a lot in the European game that we didn't know. Before we let you go. Can we grab
Hold on. I got to take 5 minutes. I need to send him my question. What's in the bag? Mac put it on the screen. It's my question. I'm happy you put it there. Can we go through your bag? Are you a gear guy or no?
Yeah. What do you want to know? Ask away, man.
I'm like a really big gear head. I like to know like what guys are playing. Not so much why they're playing it. Cause I kind of know what, but like, I know some people like to hear it. So maybe just go through.
I'm not like shaft wise. I can tell you like everything in except for the irons, which I just got. I just got my, like, I got everything new, actually. Like, I FedEx opened the box yesterday. So today and yesterday was like, or yesterday was my first time with the new club. So it's awesome. So I'm a Titleist
nothing,
guy.
Nothing beats it though. Nothing beats unwrapping it. Oh, man.
It's the best thing ever. So good. So good. Actually, I'll start with the wedges. So the wedges I go, so I've got the SM9s. I've got all my clubs are half inch long. Mm-hmm. I've got like one extra wrap on every grip, just the new, like the multi-compound. I don't like that align thing that they do, so I just have like the original multi-compound
just grips. White, any color?
Red, just red, Canada, nice. Baby. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I run 60. I've got 54 that's been 1 degree weak, 55, and then 50. Just give it the five degree difference on each one for gapping. And then I've got the new CBs from pitching wedge to five iron, and then I do the old Homa with the four iron. So the four iron, I've gotten the T100. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I was hitting both, and like, they're both great, but I'm just like, man, you know,
you can't beat the look. You can't beat looking down at those CBs. I mean, they're just
no. The CBs are beautiful, and then like at the end of the day, if I'm playing a par three or whatever, and I catch a little toe, I just, you know, we hit a lot of four irons. I mean, that little extra forgiveness in the T100. Sure. I mean, just like absolutely get me on that. Like, because with the CBs, man, the CBs and the MBs, I mean, the second you kind of miss hit one, you're
20 yards short. Yeah,
absolutely. So, yeah, no, the four iron and the T100. And then I've got the new like TS, the new TSR hybrid TSR, that they came out. Yeah.
You're a hybrid guy or an iron?
Hybrid guy.
No two iron, no three iron?
No two iron, no two, three iron.
Even in England?
Yeah, even in England, man. Okay.
I've got like, so my top, like the top of my swing, like I've got kind of like the Morikawa kind of hobbling. I've always had the bowed wrist, and actually you guys would like appreciate the hockey side of it. It all comes from just like slap shots, man. So like I can knock it down and hit stingers with anything. So I like hitting like I can hit a four iron stock, like a normal four iron goes about 225 carry, but then if I hit that kind of back foot stinger, like I can keep it down like 8 feet off the ground and get it running forever. So don't get me wrong, like I love the look of those driving irons. I've just never had kind of the need for one because it's just like gapping purposes. I'd rather have a hybrid that I can kind of cut up into the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then, the three wood and the driver, both in the TSR three. I've got the lightest, I got the 60 gram shaft in the driver. I've got both, all three up in the woods are the hazardous smoke black, tour stiff. I've been cruising this year. I did a lot of time in the gym this year, trying to get bigger, trying to get faster. So I'm cruising around on course like 120, 121. Nice. So it's nice. It's nice to have a couple holes that I played here like last year. It's cool coming back to the same place like every year because you can kind of go like, oh, like, you know, I've got shorter clubs. Yeah, exactly. You know, that bunker's not in play anymore and stuff like that.
You're moving it then. You're moving it. 120.
I was never a big hitter, but then like, I just committed the last couple of years to just like, let's hit the ball far. Cause the driver's my favorite club in the bag, man. The new technology now, man, I don't know how you miss a fair. Like this TSR three, man, I can't miss the fairway. Like I don't think it's unbelievable.
Okay.
Easy.
You're talking about,
I mean, driver's the best club in my bag. Yeah, I'm money with it. Yeah. But when you get what are you rolling? You're rolling a Scotty then?
Sorry. No, so that's where it gets a little dated. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I've got the Seymour FGP mallet. Yeah. So like
Fender shafted.
Yeah.
That's unique. You've been rolling that for a little while.
I've been rolling that now. Just I just started in the off season with it. I've always really liked the idea of just that center shaft.
Yeah,
I've never used one before, and then I started using one over the winter, and was like, "Holy crap, man! Like this feels great." And then that little whatever they call it, the red dot, yeah, there, that, the alignment
that they bury tool, underneath, it, yeah.
It's really, I mean, honestly, standing over putts now, it's almost like just a little trigger. Like you're not thinking about line or anything. You line up. I have three lines on my ball that I put down. Once I'm lined up, like you can just get over it and roll it. Like you don't have to think. Yeah.
Pro V1 or Pro V1X?
Pro V1X. Yeah.
Face balance. Like that seemed more to be face balance. Yeah.
No, it's got a little toe hang on. Little flow.
All right. I just wanted to go back to one. So you were talking about gapping with the hybrid. What did you say what degree the hybrid was?
21.
21. Okay. So
it's kind of like it's like a 3-iron.
You're hitting that thing high though.
Yeah. So
yeah.
That gapping makes sense. And then yeah, especially if you're like you talked about your yardages and stuff. So okay, that makes sense to me. So because I was just thinking like I can't remember what, like I had the U500 for a little bit there too. And I think it was like the 3-iron, but that one was 21 degree. And then they had a 23 degree as well, like a different. So yeah, I was just kind of, I just wanted to make sense of it in my own head. That's cool. I like that idea. So you can bring something high if you're like, you're using that for par fives or whatever it is, bringing something high and in, right? So
that's it. I got my 3-wood. I cranked my 3-wood to 16 degrees. I like it like coming in hot. Like we come into so many par fives now that like, you know, if you're hitting your 3-wood and now that I'm cruising at a faster speed, I mean, it just turns into like, I love hitting driver. So it's not like a 3-wood's not a club that I'm like, oh, I need to like improve on accuracy. So I'm going to hit it off the tee. I only hit 3-wood for the most part when I'm going into a par 5. So to, you know, have 16 degrees, this something that lands soft is so much better than having that 15 or 14 degree like club that you can hit 295. Like, it's just like, I don't have a purpose for that club.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why guys carry 5-woods too, for that same reason, right? For
exactly.
Landing them soft into those par fives.
Yeah. And like even the 7-wood too is becoming more and more common in people's bags. For sure. Right? So especially
DJ's using a 7-wood.
Yeah. He's had one in there since, like, he had one in there for the Masters in 2019. So that's kind of like when it became, I think when it became like more, I don't know, just more notice in bags and whatnot, and then people want to get them and trying to get like, you're a lefty too, trying to get one of those things like a unicorn, man, trying to get a set.
Trying to get anything, man. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Like I remember for the longest time as a kid, like everybody wanted a Scotty, and then it was just like, dude, you couldn't find a left-handed Scotty anywhere. Like, you know, and then all of a sudden, like they come out with certain models that it's like, they only make them in right-handed and all this stuff. I'm just like, I don't know. That's part of the reason I never gained a Scotty for the longest time. It's just, I couldn't get them.
Yeah. I'm hiding those suckers. Too. Yeah. I'm hiding those things in my basement. There's times
too in the States too. Cause no one's a lefty down.
No one's a lefty, man. Yeah.
They're all hiding down there, and I'm like, Bryser knows, I'm pretty much stuck on one. I got an old Del Mar honey dip that I had a friend of ours redo some work on. He stuck it in a bucket and made it copper. So it's like,
Chris Custom Clubs? He's down in California, isn't he?
Yeah.
Chris Custom Clubs. Where is he?
He's in Riverside. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So like, I mean, like everything's pretty close around, to be honest. Like the LA area, like California is actually like as big a state as it is. Like, you know, like you see guys like that, you hop on the 5 and you go up and down, like, you know, here all the time. How it might take you 8 hours in traffic, but you know, guys do it.
Yeah.
He does
a lot of like tools and stuff now too, like divot tools and stuff like that, but he refinishes. He just pretty much sticks with wedges and putters now. He doesn't do full sets. He's like a half set guy. He's like a less than 14 kind of bad guy. He's like, but he's a cool dude, man. He does incredible work. Like my putter's insane, and like, it'll be hard to get me off that. Like,
I love that. I love that model too.
Yeah.
That's a freaking cool putter, man.
It's just so beautiful too. And it was like, it was the year that they did a honey dip. I think it was 11 or 12. And then, And then he made it look even better. And then I had my old gamer. I had two of them. I had my old gamer that I gave to a buddy of mine. I regret it. So Kirk, I need that thing back. I'll pay more than what you paid me for it. But
I grew up playing because I couldn't find like something like Scotty that was like that and left-handed. I gamed the Odyssey number 9.
Yeah, me too.
The Mickelson. Yeah, that was the one. That was my gamer growing up.
Man, I got a Tiger Woods face on that thing. I just wore out the it has a white insert. Like it's just toast. It's just dead. Like the insert itself is just, I know you can get it done and stuff, but it's kind of cool. Like I just have it sitting down in the bag. Like I just go down on the perfect practice mat or whatever and roll some putts with it. It's such a nice putter. Like classic, man. It's a classic.
I just got my baby for life, so I'm set.
Yeah.
That's it. What'd you get?
I just got the 5.5, the Phantom.
Oh, the 5.5. Yeah, man, is that the, that's the JT.
Yeah. Well, his old one, he has the new plumber's neck on his new one now, but I mean, Homa still uses that little slant neck. I mean, it's, in my opinion, it's the best looking putter that has ever been made. I mean, I'm very biased because that's just what I like, but
it's a great putter.
Yeah,
it's so good looking. And I mean, I haven't rolled it yet. I've rolled it once on greens out of that are fairway length because it's in Michigan and it's early season, but I mean, we'll see how it goes. I'm putting's not my strength, but at least I look good doing it, right?
That's it, man.
Exactly. Big man time. that's all you need is that confidence, right? Bricer's yeah,
maybe I'll turn a new leaf this summer.
Could be,
start shooting 68 and 67.
Yeah,
dude, gotta start like willing that ball in the hole, like everything. Just speak. Man,
if I had a short game, that'd be a really good goal.
Yeah, you're breaking 70 if you start keeping around 30, 32 like putts.
Consistently.
You just gotta get the putts down, man. It's like
it's crazy.
You're probably 37, 38 putts or something around, right? That's what's.
Speed, man. Work on speed control. That's like that's usually because it, even like if you're lipping out, do you lip out or just miss a lot of putts?
I blow it 6 feet by or at
least. That's it. It's speed, man.
But I screw myself over because I play 7 different courses 7 days a week with different
it's so
hard being like a weekend golfer going out and playing a green this day and a green that day and being a 10 on the stint meter and then going and play a 13. Like it's so hard to, you know, that's where I struggle. But
it's I had even this winter people were asking me like how do I get like, you know, I'm an 8, how do I get like scratch and blow? I'm like, well, like I quit your job almost, like this is now your first
much
time. Like you know, like, you know, it takes so much time. Like I've seen a study done, like, you know, like it's just like it's pure science, like almost like just quantity of hours needed to like kind of achieve each handicap and like and then to maintain it. I mean, sure, you might have rounds where you get down, you can shoot 68 69, but like what are you going to do consistently, like, you know, playing different courses every week and only playing once or twice, like
just come out to Port Hope more often, man. Once you get out here rolling out,
Port Hope will slap you around.
I've never been out there, but that's what I've heard.
The greens just
slap you up.
The greens just beat the piss out of you every game. So if you can, every match, if you can start rolling it well out here, then you can roll it anywhere. It's like the fifth or sixth oldest course in Canada, right? So like the greens were built, like some of them are originals, like they're OG greens. So some of them are meant to have like a centimeter of grass on them or whatever, right? So they weren't meant to roll like they are now, and they're Jeff does a good job out there, man.
You ever played Cherry Downs, Craig?
In Cherry Downs, I feel like I have as a kid, man.
Back when they were private, there was like rumors that they poured concrete pads underneath them, like they were just rock solid. It was insane.
That's how
I don't know if that's ever true, but I mean,
that's how Mont Hill was where I grew up playing for a while. Because what the guy, it came out after they got bought that like the previous like superintendent like wasn't doing like. Because I never, like, for the years that I played there, I couldn't remember, like, when they were punched. Like, they wouldn't punch and fill them with sand. So, like, the new superintendent came in and was like, they're supposed to be about, like, this much sand or whatever, like, under the grass. And apparently there was, like, this much. Like, this it was just every up. Time you land on the green and, like, you know, I got really good at landing wedges like 20 feet short and having them like bounce a couple of times.
Just like clay underneath and like rocks and pebbles. It's just gravel underneath, man. So it's just
that's it. Yeah.
That's, I don't know. Yeah. Like that's why I love Port Hope, because it's, it's like an old classic style course. It's got some new holes and stuff, but it's it'll they had a players tour event out there a little while ago. Only one guy.
Ryan Borg,
par.
Man.
Yeah, Ryan Borg. Yeah. Out there. Yeah. He was the only guy under par. I think he was one under, man. So
I love Borgie, man.
They made some changes since then. I know they had some tough like tree locations and stuff like that, but yeah, it was it's a good one to kind of go out and get that confidence up. Like if you're rolling it well there, you know,
or
like,
down
well, my confidence is typically it's typically always down, right? So then if I have a good day, I know that I'm rolling it well. I know that I can go play. Yeah, so it's positive thinking.
There's a lot of courses like that, man. That was the Nash for me. I played the Ben Kern at the National this year and got my ass kicked and shot like 77 or something, and then I went back there and played with a couple of guys, like CPGA guys like Vic Selesky and some of those guys, and shot, I bogeyed 18. I was 3 under bogey free and bogeyed 18 from the middle of the fairway, or I would have had a bogey free round at the NAF. That was upsetting for sure.
You just go back, but like, and you're just head back to the first tee block and just do it all over again.
Yeah, I can do it, man. Going back, I'm playing 36. Yeah. Let me back out there, man.
I recognize that name. I think he won like, I think he had won an event recently, right? Like one of the PGA.
He won like, Canada, I think he won like OUA championships like back in the day, like crazy. Yeah. Won like 8 times in a row. And he teaches like some of the guys, like some of the Waterloo boys he taught. Yeah. I think he teaches Brennan Leonard and like Austin Ryan and those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are some players, man. There's so many good players in this area. I love it. It's great too. Like for Bryce and I, we said, this is episode number 125. So, if somebody's still with us, this is family's still following us now. This is great. But man, it's like, it's so cool. Cause we try to rotate it like a pro every like 3 weeks or so. And man, it's been really, really cool to like, some of the stories are just wild. So this is one of the first where like where you've been kind of heading overseas and playing a little bit. So that was definitely interesting for us, man. Yeah. It was a cool episode, but Craig, this was great, man. Really appreciate it.
That was awesome being on, man. It was really good chatting with you guys. I mean, that was it. It was just chatting for however long we've been on. I mean,
but we do.
Yeah, man. We're getting some good feedback and stuff too. And like we said, the guests have been great, man. You're like a pro at this. I don't know if you've done podcasts, but you are very good at this. So
thank you so much.
We'd love to have you back. And I know any of our listeners they'll be, you know, wanting to kind of follow around with your career a little bit, see what's going on in 2023. So, do you have your Instagram handle handy? That's not easy to say.
Yeah, it's just Craig Steff. Yeah. So it's my first name, STEF. So you don't have to try and pronounce or spell anything ridiculous. Yeah. Just STEF. So, follow along. Yeah. Hopefully you guys will learn it about me. We're a pretty confident guy. I think it's gonna be a massive season. I'm feeling really good about everything. Right. So moving forward, hopefully just get the ball rolling quick and then just start, you know, hoisting some trophies and going from there.
Yeah, there you
go. Love it, man. Love it. All the best, Craig. This is great. Instagram handles below for anybody who wants to just click it, follow along. And then we got to have you back, man. We love looping back in a few months or something like that. See how things are going after you get your second or third win in a row. We got to get back,
man. And absolutely. Once I'm playing with Rory and those boys there.
Yeah, there you go.
Like it. Bryce and I are looking forward to that case of Moosehead too. Appreciate that. I'll just send you.
That ace will be coming soon there, apparently, boys. Yeah, you guys are like the lucky charms for the boys.
We've spoken it into existence.
We need to get our seconds now, man.
Yeah, I know, man. It's a battle. I got one on like a small course, like, so I technically have two, but one of them is like when I was young on a small course. I don't know if that really counts, but
goes in the hole. It goes in the hole, man.
That's true. Yeah.
I haven't had one, but I've seen that like whole thing. Like, it's on an executive course and it was 140 yards. Dude, that's a hole in one, man.
Like, well, plus I was
it's a par three. It's a hole in one.
I was like 12. Yeah. Man. I was like 12. So that's like, it's like playing a 190 yard par three now. Right. So
Exactly. It's impressive, man. Exactly. You were hitting like a 5 iron from like however far it was.
I think I was too. I think I was hitting a fire for like 130 or 140 or whatever. But Craig, this was great, man. Really appreciate it. We definitely got to have you back. This is cool, man. It was a good long chat. Anybody who stayed with us, appreciate it. Definitely go over and follow Craig Steffarak if you see him in person.
Steffarak. That's it. Bang. Perfect, man. Exactly. good talking to you boys. All right. And we'll talk again soon after a couple of wins. And then you got that moose head coming to your door, boys.
For sure.
I'll send the address over right now.
That's it, boys. All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, buddy.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it.
He's out in my ball and of course where I tee up. I lose a ball and I re-up. I miss a fairway, I probably end up in the ocean or maybe the beach. And I'm on a par five and I'm finna go reach it. Second was blind, I ain't see it. Feel like it might be an albatross, worst case scenario.